Welcome to The Secret Truth. I'm George Butler. We've got quite a few clips tonight we're going to go over. And we're going to start off with some commentary by Representative Matt Gaetz. And he's talking about Twitter and how he thinks that they've been using a banning on him on his Twitter account. And so stealth banning, I believe, is what they call it. So listen carefully to hear what he has to say about what he believes they've been doing to representatives.
One of the biggest tech companies, Twitter, was just caught suppressing the accounts of lawmakers whose politics the owners of Twitter don't agree with. One of those lawmakers taking action, and he's going to join us next to explain what he's going to do. Stay tuned. Well, Twitter has long denied that it is biased against conservative accounts. That's obviously a lie. It's always obviously been a lie, and now it is a proven lie. A new report by Vice found that Republican lawmakers on the conservative accounts wouldn't show up in the search bar when users searched for them. That is censorship, obviously, and it was intentional. Congressman Matt Gaetz of Florida was one of those conservatives shadow banned by Twitter. He has filed a complaint against the company with the Federal Election Commission. Congressman Gaetz joins us tonight. Congressman, thank you for coming on. So I guess the first is a factual question. You're certain that this happened to you and it was intentional?
Well, I'm certain that there were only four members of Congress who had their voices suppressed on Twitter. Matt Gaetz, Jim Jordan, Mark Meadows, and Devin Nunes. So that'd be one hell of a coincidence. My suspicion is that if people were effectively communicating a conservative message, they got caught in Twitter's troll trap. The reason that I think that that is illegal is because that it gives advantages to our political opponents. It gives them access to the platform that we don't have. If Twitter was a billboard company and they gave Democrats access to their billboards and not Republicans, that would be an illegal corporate donation to the campaigns of Democrats. Here, instead of the billboard, it's the auto fill-in function as a part of Twitter's search feature that wasn't available to me, Devin Nunes, Mark Meadows, or Jim Jordan, and it's available to Democrats.
You believe that the FEC can remedy this?
They absolutely can institute fines, just like they could institute fines and punishment against any company that illegally makes a corporate donation to a political campaign. Here, the corporate donation is allowing Democrats and the people running against me specifically to have access to elements of the search feature that I didn't have access to. And why, Tucker? Why? Twitter has said in their official response that it was my behavior that resulted in this. I don't know what behavior that is. So are we really going to trust tech companies to be able to just decide with no transparency what behavior limits someone's ability to amplify their message? That sounds like the tech tyranny series you did a couple months ago is coming to life before our very eyes.
Well, it clearly is. And Twitter is a fairly small player in this world. It's a failing company anyway. Google dominates all of tech. And in fact, it's the portal through which almost all human information flows. So if Google were to hold things back in search or put its thumb on the scale in any way, they could have a huge effect on our society. Congress exists to make sure that the public interest is represented. And yet I've never heard a member of Congress say, we're going to get to the bottom of this. We're going to break up Google. We're going to fulfill our oversight role here. Why not?
Well, frankly, too many members of Congress just don't understand the gravity of the issue, but now we're the ones that have the targets drawn on our foreheads, and so I think that you'll see more engagement from the Congress coming forward. A reasonable libertarian might ask, why shouldn't I just leave Twitter? Why should I have excessive government regulation? And it's important to recognize Twitter and other social media companies use the federal government to get rid of lawsuits that they don't want to have to defend against, and they use a provision that requires them to hold themselves out as a neutral public forum. So Twitter and Facebook can't say on one hand, we're neutral and thus we shouldn't have to respond to lawsuits, and then on the other hand, tell me and other outspoken conservatives that our behavior results in suppression on their platform.
Right.
They can't have it both ways.
Well, Google has a monopoly, as does YouTube, and they routinely suppress political views they don't agree with, and the Congress does absolutely nothing about it. And I hope they will change their ways immediately. Congressman, thank you. It was great to see you, and I hope you'll keep us posted on how this turns out.
Will do. Thanks, Tucker.
They have been caught, so it's a proven fact. It's widely accepted that Twitter was doing stealth banning of very conservative accounts. And also, Facebook has been doing it, and Google overall on some of their videos have been doing similar things. So it's been biasing the whole accessibility to news to the liberal Democratic opinion. Coming up next is Jim Jordan. And he's going to be running for the House. It's just recently announced. And he also, along with Meadows, filed an impeachment charge. But it has to clear some hurdles first before it can do any good. But listen to this interview here with Jim Jordan and see what you have. Just think about that. Here we go right now.
All right, yesterday, Ohio Congressman Jim Jordan announced that he was running for Speaker of the House. And earlier, I sat down with the congressman to ask why he's running and what agenda he's going to push. Take a look. Joining us now, Ohio Congressman Jim Jordan, who has announced he is running to be the next Speaker of the House. How are you, sir? Welcome. Rare in studio appearance.
Thank you, Brad.
We're 101 days now outside of the midterm elections. I'm calling it the most important midterm in our lifetime.
Right. They want to impeach the president. If they win, we got to win.
Explain. Yeah.
Well, if the Democrats get in office, they will go after President Trump because they've went so far left with this socialist, progressive Democrat, agenda they have. So this is why it's so critical. And here's what's at stake. Think about the last year and a half. Regulations reduced. Taxes have been lowered. Unemployment at its lowest in 20 years. Economy is just humming along. Gorsuch is on the court. Kavanaugh's on deck. The embassy's back in, embassy's back in Jerusalem. We're out of the crazy Iran deal, and the hostages have come home from North Korea. And I'm forgetting a few things. By anyone's definition, that is an amazing year and a half. But what's amazing about that list as well is Congress only helped with a little bit of that, the regulation and the taxes. Congress has got to do a better job, and that's why I want to be the next Speaker of the House. We got to focus on doing what we told the American people we were going to do, delivering on health care, delivering on the border security, on immigration, and all those other issues.
How did it happen in the middle of the health care debate? We discovered that there are about 100 House Republicans and certainly seven Senate Republicans that had voted to repeal Obamacare in 2015.
Same bill.
And then they changed when it mattered.
Six Republican senators voted against the exact same legislation they'd supported before. After telling the Americans, after getting elected in 10, after getting elected, taking the Senate in 14, after winning the White House in 16 on that issue, and then not to deliver on that. We haven't delivered on health care reform, repealing Obamacare. Haven't delivered on welfare reform, work requirements for able-bodied people. Haven't delivered on immigration policy and border security wall. And certainly haven't delivered on holding and controlling spending. That's what we got to do, because that's what we told the American people we were going to do if they gave us the privilege to serve.
Okay, but the president on his own, as you pointed out, has accomplished
a lot.
He's
doing it.
And why is there this reluctance among some Republicans? Is it the president is not the conventional establishment figure? He's iconoclastic. He's bold. He tweets. He says, calls it out fake news. What is it that some Republicans don't like?
It's the town. It's Washington. The swamp is the swamp. They don't like someone like Donald Trump coming in there and changing the swamp and changing the way that town works. There's just this reluctance to ever change, even though the American people said in 2010, we're going to put you in charge of Congress to go change things. Even though in 2014, they gave us the Senate to say, go change things. And even though in 2016, they gave us the White House to go change things. There's still this reluctance. And the president feels it every stinking day, because he is bound and determined to do what he told the American people he was going to do, what he ran on, the mandate we got from that election, and the House needs to do the same. We've done some good things, but not near enough. The reform that we need to do, like the president's doing,
and,
that's
by the way,
what
in fairness
happen.
To Paul Ryan, the House has been better than the Senate.
It sure has.
A lot better. But let's go through this. So we have 14 states record low unemployment. Record low unemployment for African Americans, Hispanic Americans, and women in the workplace. And then take it from there. I mean, we've had nothing but huge, massive economic, great economic news one after the other. You mentioned the foreign policy successes. And I'm thinking there's a track record to run on.
Of course. Let's go campaign on it. And let's also tell the American people, you put us back in power in the House of Representatives. We will do what we said. We will help President Trump accomplish what you told us you wanted to accomplish in 2016, what we all ran on.
If you become the speaker, and look, I will support you for speaker. Because I think the Freedom Caucus has been the most committed to fighting to keep their promises, and literally the single biggest group fighting to defend the things that are conservative in the country and have helped the president the most.
Yeah, we talk about, when we formed our group 3 years ago, we talk about the countless number of Americans who feel like Washington has forgotten them and left them behind. We want to go fight for those people, do the things we told them we were going to do. I say this all the time, and I say it because I believe it. We make the job of being a member of Congress way too complicated. It's pretty simple. What'd you tell the people you're going to do when they gave you the chance to go serve them, their family, their business? What'd you tell them you're going to do? Go do that. And be willing to stand up and have the debate. All too often, we forfeit even before the debate even happens. Before the referee even blows the whistle, we just say, we're going to forfeit the match. We're going to forfeit the game. Let's play the game. Let's wrestle the match. Let's make it happen doing what we told them we were
going to
do.
How will you be different?
That simple. Here's a great example. The omnibus spending bill. We were so poised to win that debate and hold spending down on non-defense spending, do what needs to be done for our troops, but hold it down on everything else because Chuck Schumer had shut down he shut the government down on Friday? And over the weekend, the American people said, you're crazy. And so on Monday, he says, Shazam, I'm going to open the government back up because he was losing in the political, in the public relations world. So he opens the government back up. A few weeks later, we had a chance on that big spending bill to treat our troops the way they deserve to be treated for defending our country and hold the line on everything else. And what did we do? What the swamp always does. We said, nope, we won't even have the debate. Even though we got a guy in the White House who was great at debating, great at taking the message to the American people, even though we had all that, we said, let's just do what we always do. Let's spend more money on everything, and the deficit goes up, the debt goes up, and the band plays on, and the same old
and
swamp.
And the president literally squeezed because if he wants the money for defense, because we literally
because we sent him a bad bill.
All right, Jim Jordan, good luck. We're going to watch this very closely. Do we know when Ryan's leaving?
We do not. He says he's going to stay, so I take him at his word.
All right. Thanks for being with us.
You bet. Thank you.
Coming up next is John Bounds with Infowar.com. And he has some very, very good insights and comments on the Rosenstein possible impeachment and corruption and so forth. But anyway, here we go with John Bounds with Infowar.com.
While it is very unlikely that the articles of impeachment filed by 11 congressmen led by North Carolina Representative Mark Meadows and Ohio Representative Jim Jordan will garner support from the majority of the go-along-to-get-along Republicans.
What I've heard is Jim Jordan wants to just take attention away from the scrutiny that he is under in Ohio. That could be part of it. The fact that truth and fact and data and evidence have never been something that the Republicans have sought or based their decision-making on, so they would want to hurt Rosenstein so that they could hurt the Mueller investigation. But hopefully, saner minds will prevail on the Republican side, and they won't bring this up.
The details within the documents regarding the impeachment of Rod Rosenstein offer cogent insight into the stonewalling Rosenstein and the Department of Justice have engaged in before and after President Trump took office. Soon after Attorney General Jeff Sessions' recusal, the Republicans have been calling for a second special counsel to collect evidence regarding, namely, Hillary Clinton and former President Barack Obama's involvement outside of the Mueller investigation.
If they had spies in my campaign, during my campaign, for political purposes, That would be unprecedented in the history of our country. That would be one of the biggest insults that anyone's ever seen, and it would be very illegal. We want to make sure that there weren't. I hope there weren't, frankly.
A second special counsel has been dodged by Deputy AG Rosenstein and Attorney General Jeff Sessions at every turn. And as stated in the resolution, it is evident Deputy Attorney General Rosenstein signed an FBI application to renew FISA surveillance on Carter Page. As such, his conduct in authorizing the FISA surveillance at issue in the joint congressional investigation makes him a fact witness central to the ongoing investigation of potential FISA abuse. Deputy Attorney General Rosenstein's failure to recuse himself in light of this inherent conflict of interest and failure to recommend the appointment of a second special counsel constitute dereliction of duty.
Now, there's a lot of talk about FISA applications, and many people that I see talking about it seem not to recognize what a FISA application is. A FISA application is actually a warrant, just like a search warrant. In order to get a FISA search warrant, you need an affidavit signed by a career federal law enforcement officer who swears that the information in the affidavit is true and correct to the best of his knowledge and belief. And that's the way we operate. And if it's wrong, sometimes it is, if you find out there's anything incorrect in there, that person is going to face consequences.
This oversight by Rosenstein, as documented in the resolution, continues to go downhill. Rosenstein refuses to provide all of the documentation surrounding the FISA warrant issued on Carter Page. Rosenstein also failed to notify material fact witnesses by way of congressional request for their testimony. And then there were the redactions. The Department of Justice, under the supervision of Mr. Rosenstein, unnecessarily redacted the price of FBI Deputy Director Andrew McCabe's $70,000 conference table because it was potentially embarrassing information. There was the redaction of Agent Peter Strzok's personal relationship with FISC Judge Rudolph Contreras. Also, the redaction of high-ranking Obama administration officials, such as former White House Chief of Staff Dennis McDonoghue, and the redaction of high-ranking FBI officials, such as former Deputy Director Andrew McCabe. The DOJ acknowledged the unnecessary redactions and agreed that some of the information should not have been redacted in an April 16, 2018 letter to Representatives Meadows and Jordan. Mr. Rosenstein's memo articulating the scope of the special counsel investigation, which began by noting the following allegations were within the scope of the investigation at the time of your appointment and are within the scope of the order, with nearly everything following the mention of those initial allegations redacted. Mr. Rosenstein's memo is classified and is almost completely redacted, raising concerns the appointment of Robert S. Mueller as special counsel began outside the scope of regulations for special counsel investigations by originating on counterintelligence rather than criminal basis. Despite the significant public interest in the matter and the constitutional authority of Congress to conduct oversight of the DOJ, Mr. Rosenstein has repeatedly failed to provide a less redacted version of the scope memo, even in a classified setting. And then there is the obfuscation of the legitimacy of the Steele dossier done under Rosenstein's watch. The dossier was intentionally transformed into evidence rather than what it really was. A fictional, dirty-dealing, backstabbing, DNC-funded attempt at framing Donald Trump. Rosenstein's impeachment may fall on deaf ears, but he is obviously as crooked as the day is long.
The chair recognizes the gentleman from Texas.
John Bound reporting for Infowars.com.
Boy, that was a hard-hitting report right there by John Bound. We want to thank him for that. And coming up next, we've got a couple of different interviews that we're going to weave together here. Laura Ingraham coming up next on a clip here. Interviewed Kevin Hassett. He's the chairman of the White House Economic Advisors. And he has some very, very good statistics about the economy and how Trump has brought the economy back. So, and then I'm going to follow that by Steve Bannon being interviewed on Hannity about the closeness and what the Republicans need to do well in this midterm. But first, we have Laura Ingraham interviewing Kevin Hassett, chairman of the White House Economic Advisors.
Well, here to react is the chairman of the White House Council of Economic Advisors, Kevin Hassett. Kevin, thanks for joining us tonight.
It's great to be here. Thank you.
I know you're not surprised. I knew this would happen. This number comes out after, and we're going to play some of the great predictions from last year. And these media types do everything in their power to downplay it or give credit to President Obama. It's stunning, frankly.
Right. I mean, after President Trump, it's Laura Ingraham's economy, really, right? Because he pursued the policies that you've been advocating for years and years. How long have we known each other? 20 years? Something
20,
like that, right?
20 plus.
And the fact is that we've said if we cut corporate taxes, then the jobs will come home. We've said that if we pursue energy dominance, then there'll be lots of exploration and drilling. And we said if we pursued better trade deals by showing that we're tough, that we'd reduce the trade deficit. And so if you look at the numbers that just came out, we've got a capital spending boom, structures investment skyrocketed because of all the drilling, and the trade deficit went down and contributed to higher GDP growth. And so everything about the Trump agenda is working. And, of course, that's going to drive the critics crazy. And I'd like to add one last thing. I promised not to filibuster, that there can be a sugar high in economics. And so do you remember Cash for Clunkers, which was their brilliant idea? So they bought a bunch of clunkers, and then the people had to go out and buy a new car. And so then GDP growth went up a lot in that quarter. But then after that, they had a new car, and it went back down. Right. And so that was a sugar high. What we see is capital spending. And capital spending increases supply. And so all of those factories that are being built this quarter are going to produce output in the next quarter. And that output is going to sustain the growth. And that's what the president talked about.
Well, some of the doubters, Kevin, are saying, well, a lot of this has been juiced by other countries buying our soybeans in anticipation of the tariffs that are now not going to happen, at least as far as Europe goes. So they were stockpiling the soybeans. There was a huge increase in U.S. exports of soybeans just because they were stockpiling.
Yeah.
And so that, in other words, they say in the months coming, these countries won't need to buy as many soybeans. That's going to put downward pressure on our GDP. Thus, the 4.1% very high level of today is not sustainable going forward. The president said, look for higher numbers today.
Well, you know, I don't know higher numbers, but I don't want to disagree with the president either. But the fact is that you know, we understand farmers in the White House. We know that the soybean crop is, you know, about to be harvested in September, and prices have gone down. And in part, they've gone down recently because the Chinese did stockpile, lots of soybeans in anticipation of a trade dispute. And so that is true. But there are a lot of other things in the trade data, too, like the reshoring of activity because we're no longer an unattractive tax environment. But the biggest news, though, the biggest news in today's GDP report, which I think is going to frustrate the Democrats, is this old thing called inventories, right? And so if everybody's decided they're optimistic about the country and they're going to go out and buy stuff, then the firms will ratchet up their production. But if consumption is really, really high, then they're going to have to run down their inventories because they're selling stuff off the shelves, right, because their production can't adjust so fast. And so inventory adjustments subtracted 1% from GDP growth this quarter. So really,
We've turned into Fox Business somehow tonight. But
the point is that 1% we're going to get back. We're going to get the 1% back because they have to rebuild it. Like the shelves are empty, so they got to build stuff for the shelves.
I get it. I got to remind everyone for some fun things here. This is what Paul Krugman said. This was right after the 2016 election. He said, we're very probably looking at a global recession with no end in sight. I suppose we could get lucky somehow, but on economics, as on everything else, a terrible thing has just happened. May of 2017, LA Times, if Trump thinks he can get more than 3% economic growth, he is dreaming. And those are just, you know, the ones we found in like 5 seconds in our search today. The critics are, and Jeb Bush is, by the way, saying that, yeah, this is great because of the tax cuts, but you now have to do immigration reform and you have to have free trade policy. So he was kicking the tariffs on the way to the praise there, Kevin. Final
right.
comments.
Well, the president's strong stance on trade has delivered a lot of progress in these negotiations on the trade deals. And remember, the objective is to open up European markets, open up other markets for agricultural products and other products from the U.S. And you saw the really great news from the EU this week. That would never have happened if the president hadn't fought for America's workers and stood strong, as you've been advising him to do.
Never, never, never. Kevin, thanks so much for joining
us.
Really appreciate it. And
that was very, very good reporting by Laura Ingraham. And also, the gross national product is running this last quarter at 4.1%. And that is an appreciable increase over what Obama, he was more of a caretaker and didn't really take much interest in the economy. But on the other hand, President Trump is a businessman. He's getting out there and making things happen, getting people to bring money back to the this country and establish new manufacturing lines and so forth. Coming up next is Steve Bannon. He's out of favor. Of course, he left the White House in a huff, which he shouldn't have done. That was a big mistake. But that doesn't mean he doesn't know politics and campaign strategy. And he's saying right now that the Republicans need to really get out there and hit it hard and get the vote out, get the vote out, get the vote out. So here we go with Steve Bannon and see what he has to say and the advice he's giving, interviewed by Hannity, Sean Hannity. Here we go.
Must maintain and hold to keep their majority. A lot at stake. Joining us now, former Trump White House chief strategist Steve Bannon. Here's the thing, Steve. You and I have discussed this privately. This is now battlefield 2018 because they want to impeach the president. They want their crumbs back. They want to get rid of ICE, open borders. They want to keep Obamacare. And they want to cover up the corruption that we have been exposing at the highest levels of government to steal an election. A lot at stake.
Sean, you said something that's the most important midterm. I would just like to rephrase that. And I think this is President Trump's first reelect. This is going to be an up or down vote. It's a referendum on the Trump presidency. They are very focused. The opposition is going to be very focused on trying to win the House of Representatives, try to win Congress in order to impeach President Trump and stop the entire project, right? Whether it's the economic growth, whether it's the new reorientation of the world's commercial system through trade deals, whether it's his America First national security, whether it's southern border security, you pick it. They're going to try to unwind it. So this is really, I mean, the Democrats got one thing. They got a do-over. In this November, and it's 100 days and a wake-up, 100 days and a wake-up, we're going to have essentially a national election, and that's going to determine the second half of the first term of President Trump, and I think 2020. So when people ask me about 2020, right now, we are going to have a referendum. It's going to be, I think, very focused on President Trump's record. And I would tell everybody that the way to win this is exactly like we won in 2010, that great Tea Party sweep. You're going to have to go out door-to-door, ring doorbells, do voter registration drives, and get people out. I mean, President Trump has delivered on the action. Now it's time for the populist movement, the nationalist movement, the Republicans, let me go, Republicans, everybody. Conservative movement. Yeah. Everybody that turned out in 2016, you have to do it all over again. Or the first action they are going to take under Nancy Pelosi or whoever the Democrat speaker is try to impeach President Trump.
You know, I went through the numbers, your old hometown, Breitbart. I think
it's a great piece, great piece.
But it identifies only 100 seats are really up for grabs. The others are safe because of gerrymandering, et cetera. But, so they're not in play. But you got 86 of those are Republican seats. And you're talking about the Republicans got to win 61 of the 86. So that's a lot. And historically, and I asked the president about this earlier today on my radio show, historically, seats are lost in the midterm election for the party in the White House. How do people save these 61 seats plus? Because I'd like to have a little comfort margin there.
Here's what you have to do. We picked up 62 or 63 net seats in 2010. And it's not about money. It's about ideas, and it's about getting out and turning out folks. President Trump has delivered. He said he was going to take action. He took action with the destruction of ISIS. He took action with, look at these economic numbers today. They're just unbelievable. Look what he's doing on the trade deals. What he's doing is reorienting the world supply chain away from China. He is fully engaged in going back on China on the economic war they've had on us. President Trump has delivered on judges. Everything he said he was going to do, he's either done or in the process of doing. It's incumbent upon everybody that supported him in 2016. This is going to be the old-fashioned way. Okay, this is not going to be about commercials. It's not how much money you raise. This is going to be very simple. It's going to be muscle. The opposition is very different than in 16. In 16, Hillary Clinton's arrogance, their cockiness, you know, they really missed what we were doing in the upper Midwest, okay, to really break that blue wall. This time, the Time's Up movement and the resistance are very focused, and they're going door to door. It is incumbent upon everybody that supports President Trump to understand this is going to have to be the old-fashioned way. You're going to have to go door to door. You're going to have pamphlets, get voter registration, knock on doors, and get your neighbors to come out. This is all about turnout on November 6th.
So we're calling this Bannon Battlefield 2018. And tonight you're giving us like a general's overview as we now get to the 100-day countdown in this. But next week what we're going to specifically do is we're going to name every district and put it up on the screen so the audience can see. Here's the thing, because there are some people that rightly will look at their congressmen and they'll say to me and you, Hannity, Bannon, my congressman's a rhino. My senator's a rhino. You're asking me to go support this guy. I went out and supported Trump, but the stakes are so high what they want to do to the Trump agenda, which is the answer. At least that's my answer. I don't want to put words in your mouth.
No, this cuts to the heart of it. This is a national referendum, whether it's a rhino, whether it's an establishment figure, whether it's somebody, either a congressman or a senator, that you don't fully support, that is not the question now. The question is about the Trump agenda. The question is about President Trump and his agenda. And you're going to have to just put, you know, you're going to have to sometimes vote for people that you're not totally comfortable with. Okay? And this means some establishment figures, some rhinos. It doesn't matter. This is a national referendum. It's an up or down vote on the Trump presidency. If we take and force everything to November 6th, we're going to win this. There's not going to be a blue wave. And here's the benefit of not having a blue wave. When they don't get the blue wave that they've been selling their grassroots people, they're going to have. They're going to turn on themselves on a civil war in the Democratic Party. And I got to tell you, it's going to make 2020 much,
there's
much easier.
There's a reason. Wait a minute. You just motivate. There's a big reason. And it's already developing. You just look at the job numbers. Put aside the success of North Korea. And, yes, we now have remains from that war coming home this very day.
Yes.
And no more rockets being fired and a dismantled nuclear test site. And then the Iranian deal he promised to get out of. Jerusalem's the capital. And the toughest sanctions we put on Russia, but more importantly, we now have record low unemployment in this country in 14 states for women in the workforce, African Americans, Hispanic Americans, Asian Americans, and the military that have been out of work. And millions now have been taken off the food stamp rolls with more jobs available than people on unemployment. This didn't happen as fast when Reagan was president, who, you know, I'm a Reagan conservative.
If you look at the actions he's taken and you look at the results we already have, including the judges and the redoing of the federal judiciary, it's been nothing short of extraordinary. Donald Trump is a historic president. Donald Trump's a transformational president. If you want to keep that transformation going, that's why this November is not a midterm election. This midterm is the first reelect of Donald J. Trump. And everybody's going to have to put their shoulder to the wheel. It's exactly, Sean, as you remember, what we did in August of 2016. We brought the Republican establishment together, the Trump movement together, grassroots conservatives together. We put our heads down and against tremendous opposition in of the media, the opposition party media, and all the money the Clintons raised. It didn't make a difference. We won, and we won big in a historic landslide. That can happen again, and it will happen again, if people start to focus on what November 6th is, which is a national referendum on the presidency of Donald Trump.
All right, let me tell everybody, so we're going to bring you on as often as you can. I know you travel a lot, pretty much once a week from now to Election Day. And so everybody knows Steve does not like doing TV. But you think this is so important that you want to identify. We'll do this next week. We will identify every single district that's going to matter, where the real, well, battle
Bannon
battle fight 2018.
Well, we will show people, Sean, you've been so gracious to try to talk to me about this, is that I think people need to focus on where this battle is going to take place. And it's going to be, you know, people are going to have to put their shoulder to the wheel. You know, it's game on. You know, we have to leave everything on the field and no tears. I'm tired of hearing the whining, particularly on our side of the football, about, you know, this candidate, that candidate. We got to stop the whining. We have to get focus on what's needed for victory. We have 100 days and a wake up to do it.
All right, Bannon, Battlefield 2018. Next week we identify the defining races in this upcoming midterm. Steve, thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having me, Sean.
Some of the races are vacant in the representative. We're talking about the House, the big battle for the House. I think that the Republicans will pretty well hold the Senate. But there are House seats that are in jeopardy of being lost to the Democrats. And if they lose about 21 or 22, it could swing the majority the other way. So we've got to be very, very careful about that as we proceed down this way. path to victory, hopefully. But the midterms are very important, and we better be very, very, very careful here. I've got Larry Nichols coming out here with a clip, about a 10-minute clip, talking about Peter Strzok's wife being high up in the Securities Exchange Commission, and maybe that was the insurance card that they were talking about in these emails between Peter Strzok and Lisa Page. So we'll have to see if this might be a good angle. But coming up right now is Larry Nichols. He was a confidant and assistant to the Clintons when they were in office. Did some nasty things. He's repented of all that, and he's putting out some good information. Here we go with Larry Nichols right now.
Hello, everybody. It is Monday, July the 16th. And today I've got a story to tell you that's kind of weird. It's weird because it's old, but you haven't heard it. It's weird because it's old. It's extremely significant, but you haven't heard it. And it's weird because it's coming from a source, not me, a source, a couple of sources. True Pundit is one, the main one, and then another one called Riddick. Now, these stories were found by one of our group. I will not use her name because this goes out to any and everybody. But this is about Peter Strzok and his wife. Her name, oddly, is Melissa Hodgman. Melissa Hodgman, H-O-D-G-M-A-N. Part of what's wrong with Washington today, you see in this case. There are a lot of employees in Washington in high-level positions by men and women that have different names, but they're married. Why? So that they don't have the obvious conflict where it doesn't look like incest is as prevalent as it is. The guys, I'm telling you, Washington, D.C., our federal government is just loaded, what I call loaded, with wives, husbands of other employees, fathers, daughters, sons, etc. But this case is that weird, significant, but you haven't heard it. Why? Melissa Hodges works for the SEC in the enforcement division. And as I understand it, she was like the number two person in the enforcement division of the SEC, Securities Exchange Commission. Her job in enforcement is to be basically a liaison from the SEC when they find wrongdoing, white collar wrongdoing in the financial community. She would be the one, or second in line to be the one, to turn that information over to the FBI for prosecution and further investigation. Well, here goes the story. Around the 1st of October in 2016, we were all told about Wiener, the Congressman Wiener that was sending texts and stuff to this young girl or girls. When they found out about that, to the person that's on here that got me the story, if I say any of this out of line, please jump in and correct me. And y'all don't hold me to this date line. You can find that out by going to the True Pundit yourselves. But when they found out about Wiener, it became obvious at about the same time that they were, the FBI was in the middle of starting to investigate Hillary. Well, when Hillary's being investigated, remember who's investigating her in the beginning, who brought on the investigation. It was McCabe and Peter Strzok. So they would have known what they were holding with Hillary, if anything. And then all of a sudden, because the Wiener thing, the Wiener computer comes and they find 650,000 emails and stuff on his computer, some of which contained classified material from Hillary, that it became a big deal. All of a sudden, Barack Hussein Obama, on or around the 14th of October, within hours of finding out about Hillary Wiener, the investigation with his computer and all that, within hours, President Obama himself gives Peter Strzok's wife, Melissa Hodgman, a promotion. And she is now the assistant director of the SEC over enforcement. Now, what's tricky about this? Well, if you were looking at Peter Strzok's texts and emails that we've all heard about, there was even a hearing. One of his lines that he said was they had an insurance policy. An insurance policy to stop Trump. Now, I'm paraphrasing. It's not exactly the word, but that's the point. They had an insurance policy to stop Trump. Well, everybody seems, I think, at this point to believe that that was in the abstract, that they were going to come up with an insurance policy. Well, now, because of this information coming out about his wife a year ago, that's when it was written, a year ago, thereabouts, I think we now know what that insurance policy was that Peter Strzok was telling his girlfriend. The insurance policy was he had control of the SEC enforcement person, so if there was anything there bad about Hillary, guess who could stop it from being transferred to the FBI? Melissa Hodgman. If they used the SEC to go looking into Donald Trump's past, and if they could find anything like, oh, his campaign manager Manafort and some of his business dealings going back to 2000 and whenever, guess who had that information that could be turned over to the FBI? Melissa Hodgman. Guys, this story that has been there on True Pundit and Riddick, and even I think the Wall Street Journal wrote about it back a year ago or whenever, has been laying there. And nobody has brought it to the surface, when in fact and indeed it may be the key to the Peter Strzok insurance policy that they had to make sure Hillary won, number one, or if she didn't win, that they could control Trump. Guys, this is giant stuff. Giant stuff. Melissa Hodges could go and check into offshore accounts. She could do anything she wanted. And the key is she was the person that would determine from the SEC that which could be turned over to the FBI. Or if there was something bad about somebody they liked, she could kill it and not turn it over to the FBI. But do y'all see the significance here? This is the entrance policy he was trying to tell Lisa Page about. They had Trump every which way from Sunday. If he did anything financially kinky through his company, companies, or his people in his campaign, that was the perfect group to investigate it. And she had the power to go and investigate accounts offshore, anywhere in the world, to track down information about somebody they wanted to get, if they chose to get somebody. And probably more important, first off, let me say this. If you had any doubts as to President Trump and the cleanliness of his business dealings, certainly in other countries, I think you see now that Melissa Hodgman, Peter Strzok's wife, would be in a perfect position to check out everything the man's ever done.
Well, that was Larry Nichols. He always has some good angles about what's going on, sort of behind the scene type of guy, you know. But he did put out some good things. We've got Owen Stroyer coming up next, talking about the Seth Rich murder. And there's been evidence lately that, well, there's interviews that are taking a place with a Luke fella. And the Luke is saying that he has information that it was a government hit on Seth Rich. But we don't know how accurate that is. But I'm going to let you listen to this interview that Owen Stroyer had. And this is insightful stuff. So listen carefully and see what you think. We've got to keep our minds open. We think Seth Rich was murdered because we think he gave up the information from the DNC server to WikiLeaks. So that's what the angle is. We think that Julian Assange has pretty well verified that. So listen to this right now.
Owen Stroyer for Infowars.com, and yesterday on The War Room, I had Jack Berkman on as a guest who had a press conference talking about Seth Rich's unsolved murder, where he now has a witness to two men he claims admitted to the murder. But yesterday on The War Room, he announced that he will now give $20,000 to anyone who can produce surveillance tape from the night of Seth Rich's murder.
Listen, I believe in seizing the day, carpe diem. Let's seize the moment. I will take you up on your offer right now. If there's tape out there, I will offer $20,000 right now to anyone with a tape. I'll make that offer here and now. I put my word behind it. I will pay that. You bring me surveillance tape from that night, and you have millions of viewers for a program like this. I put this out to folks in the Washington, D.C. area, all over the country, all over the world. If you have tape of that night, of this incident, $20,000 for you.
So there you go. If you can produce surveillance tape from that night or any sort of tape from that night Seth Rich was killed, the unsolved murder, Jack Berkman has just said that $20,000 is yours. So let's get that word out there. Now, his source, Lucanon, has also made other connections to names that you're hearing in the news for other stories.
Yesterday we had a witness come out and really tell us what happened to Seth Rich at a unit level. A DEA agent and an ATF agent did the shooting. We've got a witness telling us that. The real question now, Owen, is who ordered this? How far up the food chain does it go? The witness also fingers Ron Rosenstein, the deputy attorney general, fingers him very clearly, saying when he was the U.S. attorney in Maryland, he knew both the DEA agent and the ATF agent, and that all three of these people had great fear of what Seth had on this thumb drive. What I really think, Owen, is that the Seth Rich matter is the epicenter of the deep state. I think Seth Rich is not the iceberg. I think he's but the tip of the iceberg in a much larger investigation of corruption within the national security bureaucracy.
So everyone is concerned, who is this Lucanon? Can we trust him? Has he been verified? Here's what Jack Berkman says.
I just spent an hour with him Sunday. I wouldn't put somebody out there in this. I was absolutely certain they were fully credible. And this guy is 100% credible. I'll tell you, Loukounon's voice is on the internet. Loukounon, whether I want it, whether he wants it, his identity will be known in just a few days. The voice is on the internet. Everything's out. I don't think there's any way to keep it secret, although I'll try. I made a commitment to him. In any event, I think he will want to come out in the coming weeks for sure, one way or the other.
Now, Jack also gave us an exclusive on the War Room yesterday, something that you haven't read or heard anywhere else. Listen to this.
Something we know that I haven't released, and I'll make some, maybe make some news here on your program, Owen. There was a witness that the D.C. police talked to. I don't want to get into her name. She was a U.S. government employee who was a live witness that night. We don't know what she saw. We don't know what information they took from her. D.C. police have never released this information. We found it out through other sources. But we're continuing to attack this from all sides. And like I say, more from Loukounon soon.
So what does it all mean? Will we ever find out who Loukounon is? Will we ever solve the murder of Seth Rich? And will anyone come forward with surveillance tape from that night of Seth Rich's murder for $20,000? Or will the price of poker have to go up? For InfoWars.com, this is Owen Schroyer.
Thank you for that clip, Owen Schroyer. I mean, you do some very good reporting over there at InfoWars. And I'm just picking out these clips tonight and playing them. But what we're seeing here develop is a more partisan, more divided, more hate-filled enmity between the Democrats and Republicans. And Hillary's got it going. She's got the hate out there. They immediately started characterizing Trump as hating the Mexicans from Mexico and calling them all kinds of criminals and everything else. And he's really never done that. They also have, they're mounting campaigns against Alex Jones. They're saying that he pushed some young person down on the sidewalk and assaulted him. This never happened. But some of the biggest guns out there are going after him and putting out just lies. I mean, just outright lies. And he's got to fend it off. But once it's put out there, then you got to get retractions and so forth. And before you can do all of that, some of the public's already heard the story. And some out there just believe some of this propaganda out there. The propaganda during Hitler's rise to power was Joseph Goebbels was the propaganda minister. And they also said, even Hitler and Goebbels and others, said the bigger lie, the better all you are. And you've got to repeat, 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 repeat. But these people are beginning to create legal liabilities that are very, very, you know, great for some of these large broadcast concerns. And so they're not going to be able to wiggle out of some of this. Well, it depends on the judge. We do have corruption, even in the judiciary, in the federal level, and, you know, all levels sometimes, you know, county, state, county, and everything. So what we have out here, we have a very corrupt society. So to try to get justice at times in a very, very corrupt society, you're not going to get it, see. And so that's what we're really up against all the time. When I'm playing these clips this evening, and want to tell you about thesecrettruth.com. Thesecrettruth.com, we broadcast from Austin, Texas. We've actually been on the air, you could say, for nearly will be 13 years this November 1st, I believe. So, yeah, we started, about 12 years. Excuse me, we'll be on the air 12 years this coming November 1st. I think we started in 2006, I believe it was. But what we're trying to do is we're not big. We're just a small little broadcaster. We try to put clips out there, and then we'll do commentary on some of the clips. We'll set the clips up. Occasionally, we'll have some interviews with some book authors and so forth. We've had well over 600 interviews, Charlotte Littlefield Brown and myself. And so we'll start having more book authors on there, too. We've got projects underway on a lot of levels in the Austin area. We keep our eyes open and our ears, you know, to the ground to try to fathom some of this disinformation and so forth. But I see a great hatred being cultivated using Solonensky method, you know. Rules for Radicals was a book that he wrote. Saul Alinsky was out of Chicago, and there's a big syndicate group up there that's promulgating all kinds of things. And that's the syndicate group that got Barack Obama into office, and so forth. And so we have these power centers, and Chicago has been a major power center. It's centered around the farming in the Midwest, you could say. That farming community in the Midwest was a very, very fertile ground. And so actually what arose from that were big cattle yards early on after the Civil War. Cattle was raised in Texas and those western states, and it was driven into the Kansas area where the first railroads ended. And then they'd load the cattle on those cattle cars, and then they would transport those into the Chicago. And then Chicago began to be known as a big slaughterhouse city, you know, for meat packing and slaughter of cattle and so forth. It became a big, big business, see. And Chicago became a big, big city. Well, today you've got some power brokers up there, and they put, you know, like I said, Barack Obama in there. He didn't do everything they wanted, but he did quite a bit for them, see. And now along comes Trump, who, you know, Hillary thought she had it wired completely, and she did to a large extent. Only at towards the end of the campaign was Trump Fabrioso was a campaign advisor, and he advised Trump to go in back into Wisconsin and Michigan and some of those states in the western part of Pennsylvania and start, you know, re-campaigning there towards the last few weeks. And I think that made the difference. That in Florida coming in were enough electoral votes to make a difference. Now, on the Democratic side, Hillary did get the popular vote, a majority of the popular vote. There again, the Republican contend there was how many of those votes were illegal votes with illegally registered people, and how many of those votes were fixed through election fraud and so forth. So the final answer is not that easy to arrive at. And it never has been, see. Now, towards the end of this program tonight, Larry Nichols was on there. He's a very interesting person. He has intimate knowledge of the Clintons and their wrongdoing. And so he does broadcast on the web and so forth. You can find him on Twitter. And then, of course, I played about 10 minutes of his 28-minute, I think, program that you can find on Larry Nichols on Twitter. But go in there and listen to him. He has some very, very good insights. He's very sick. I think he's got cancer. But he's out there still broadcasting and still trying to make a difference. And there was a lot of wrongdoing that he got caught up in with the Clintons. But he did repent, and he's sorry for having done those very, very, you know, dastardly things. But so he is someone to listen to. Otherwise, we had a sprinkling there of Sean Hannity and Laura Ingraham, a lot of Fox, and we put a couple of things in there from the InfoWars. And Alex has been a leader in this alternative news and so forth. He's doing a really fine job. I want to thank everyone out there in our listening audience, and just keep on listening. We'll be back up on air broadcast in the near future, hopefully 2 to 3 weeks. But thank you very much for listening, and good night, and God bless each and every one of you.